Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There was a lot of NBA last night. A lot of interesting storylines that are developing post-All-Star break. And to help us break them down, we have Michael Lee, who is the NBA writer for The Athletic. He joins us now on Tiki and Tinny. Michael, good afternoon. Appreciate you joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, it's good to have you. Look, one of the big issues that people are starting to have, and my co-host had this big one with LeBron James yesterday, is the fact that he seemingly is always talking about himself, including instead of his team, and that he has this switch that he can turn on and make the Lakers a winner all of a sudden. We've also heard him say, "I love a challenge." So he's embracing the drama that surrounds him. Are we shifting our perception of the great one right now?
In what sense? In that I'm trying to understand.
So first, I think we used to champion him. We used to say, "Hell, LeBron is doing something amazing, right?" He went to Cleveland. He turned the team around. Like we felt good about what he was doing. Now it feels like he's gotten cocky because he knows he can do all those things. And while there seems to be some dysfunction around the trade deadline, it's kind of subsided.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's saying, you know, I gotta bring these guys. It's just weird. Like it's changed a little bit. If you know what I mean.
It has mainly because he joined one of the glamour franchises in all the sports.
Yeah.
And the expectations aren't what they have been in other places. He could go to Cleveland and win a championship and be champion as a hero and the guy who brought this moribund community, you know, glory and allowed them to experience, you know, the wonder of LeBron. You get to witness it. But if you're going to the Lakers, you're going to a franchise that's used to winning championships. You're going to a franchise that already had Kareem and Magic and Kobe and Shaq. And so you got all these guys, and you're a part of that legacy now. And the legacy for the Lakers is not just making it to the playoffs. It's not just, you know, bringing a team, you know, out from the lottery. It's about winning championships. So for fans there, they're going to judge him differently. You know, he's not of the Laker family. He's an outsider coming in, and everyone's going to be looking at him from a different perspective than they did before. He's not the hero anymore. He's not rescuing the Lakers. This is the Lakers.
Yeah.
They don't need rescuing. They just need someone who can continue it, what's already been built.
Yes.
And I think that now people view him as somebody who has to come in there and get it done the way Kobe did, the way Shaq did. And it's just tough because he's 34 years old. He's got a bunch of young guys around him who've never been through this. So I think that in a lot of ways he can't control things the way he did, say, in a Cleveland when everyone was just so happy that he was a part of the organization. It's just a different animal now with the Lakers.
Yeah, no. Do you think that they ever turn on him? Do you think that they start feeling, man, this was a mistake to bring LeBron here? Meaning the fans, not the team, but the fans.
Oh, fans are already giving him a hard time.
Wow.
I mean, and you already have the situation where you have LeBron fans and you have Laker fans, and then you got Kobe stans who will just never give it up to LeBron no matter what he does. And that's one of the things that he's up against, too. I thought it was an interesting thing when he signed there because you sort of created these divisions and these dynamics within the Laker fan base where, you know, it's like some fans are sort of reluctant to accept him. Some fans are just like, no. You even saw when they painted up all these billboards and things throughout the city calling him the king, and people, you know, spray-painted him, and they did all these things. So he's got to come there, and he's got to win over a lot of people who, you know, have a high standard. And obviously LeBron's one of the greatest to ever play.
Yeah.
But for Laker fans, like, if you haven't done it for us, it doesn't count.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Michael Lee, NBA writer for The Athletic, joins us. The Houston Rockets were visiting the Los Angeles Lakers yesterday. They had a 19-point lead at one point in this game. And it just felt like, oh, it's going to be another runaway. James Harden's going to get his requisite 30, which he did, but it was in a loss. But the bigger issue with James and really Chris Paul is they both fouled out of this game, and they had an issue with the refereeing and the fact that they felt like they couldn't talk to the ref, and it was, I don't know, it was like they were expecting this collegial-type relationship to exist with the refereeing, and it wasn't that way. They both got their 6 fouls and were out of the game and couldn't help the team come back, not that they were. But is there a problem in the league with refereeing and the players? I feel like it's more the players thinking they deserve audience with refs, even though they don't, right?
No, they don't. And but I think there is a thing where you sort of build that relationship. You know, a lot of players go through the process of learning all the referees' names, and so they can have a conversation with them so they can get the benefit of the doubt in certain situations. And Scott Foster just clearly is not playing that game with the Rockets. And I think that's sort of what happened, you know, last night. And to see James foul out is so unusual because he's usually the guy that coerces all the Lakers to foul out. You know, you saw from earlier this year where the Lakers were like, they had their hands actually behind their backs, you know, when they were guarding James Harden because they didn't want to fall for all the swipe throughs and all the tricks that he does to draw fouls. And I think it was just sort of a, I think it's just more of a frustration thing. It's easy to lean on the refs whenever you lose a game like that. But to me, I thought their main issue was they just weren't hitting shots, you know. And if you're on the road, you can't expect the refs to bail you out in those situations. And no matter what the free throws say, and I think it was very one-sided, especially in the second half, the Lakers shot an overwhelming number of free throws than the Rockets in the fourth quarter. But it doesn't matter because you're not going to get those calls in a home arena. You got to go out there and take it on the road.
Yeah.
It's not going to be given to you. So for veteran guys, MVP caliber guys, future Hall of Famer guys to start whining about officiating, I guess it's just part of just what you do when you're in the NBA. But they know. They know that they didn't play the way you need to play to win the game. And you're definitely not going to get bailed out in those situations. So they're going to get heavy fines. And I hope it was worth it.
No, if there was going to be worth it, they should have been yelling and screaming. They were like passive, like, yeah, I don't know what else to do. Yeah. I mean, that's not worth it because nobody's going to listen heavy to you. You got to scream if you want people to pay attention. But akin to that, Michael, we saw this Tim Donaghy story that came out a couple days ago, the NBA trying to put out the fire, so to speak. Obviously, this happened years ago, 12 or so years ago. But he talked about fixing the games and things of that nature. Do we need to worry about that any longer?
Well, I think that's one of the concerns that is sort of being ignored with all the embrace of gambling now. It's mm-hmm. like everyone is acting like it's not an issue to have money involved and have fans gambling on games. And I was like, well, there's a reason why the gambling was not permitted. Like, it was for situations like this where players or officials or anyone would be involved with fixing a game. And they're like, well, you know, everybody's compensated well now, so there's no incentive. There's always incentive to make more money.
Yeah.
And if you can do things to help, you know, line your pocket, some people will do it. So there's always, you know, things that happen when money is involved and when there's a possibility that you can do something to sort of, you know, fix the game a little bit. I think it's something that people should be concerned with, honestly.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the aspects of the whole sports gaming or gambling situation that sort of, as it's progressed, and people become more open and welcome to it. There is a dark side to it, and people need to, you know, stop being ignorant to it.
Is it dangerous for Commissioner Silver to truly? He champions this, right? He's been doing
Absolutely.
It for a while. Is that dangerous?
I don't. I mean, I guess if you feel like people are going to engage in that anyway,
yeah.
Maybe you then people if people want to gamble, then just at least give them a legal way to go about doing it. The same way, I guess, with marijuana. You know, it's like people are going to use it anyway. And just go ahead and make it legal and just let them live their lives, maybe you'll sort of take away some of the criminal elements of it.
Yeah.
And I think I can understand the arguments from both sides, but I also understand that anytime you bring in possible you know, elements of corruption into your business, then it's going to be exploited.
Yeah, no, you're right. Michael Lee joining us, NBA writer for the Athletic. You bring up something interesting with marijuana. I got to do this because the NFL is very punitive with marijuana. I know guys in the NBA smoke. How come they never get caught?
Of course.
You know what I mean? How come they're never put on blast and blown up like these NFL guys are?
Well, because I think they know that it's a recreational drug, and I think that they're more progressive in the sense that they understand that it's not necessarily going to, you know, as long as it's not impacting the game, then, you know, you don't need to necessarily police it to the extreme. I mean, they do not want guys to be abusive of any type of drugs, but I think that there's sort of a wink and a nod thing when it comes to marijuana especially. And I never understood the NFL because, you know, would you rather a guy be high or drunk?
Yeah.
Or, you know, and, you know, if you medicate yourself through alcohol, that's legal. I honestly feel like that's more damaging to you than marijuana. We can go into that discussion probably for a little longer about something deeper, but I honestly feel like the NBA, is the reason why it's sort of perceived as being more progressive than the other leagues is because they sort of come down. They drop the hammer on more drugs of abuse.
Yeah.
You know, the cocaine or anything like that. You'll get suspended for that. And unless you're just a guy who can't control your weed addiction at all and you're high all the time, you know, you don't have to worry about getting suspended from using it.
Yeah, which is, I think, how it should be. It is, honestly, just having experienced it and been around the, you know, both sports for a while, it's self-medication. These guys aren't, I mean, some of them are trying to get high, but a lot of it is, I need to calm down.
Yeah.
Instead of picking up a bottle of vodka, I'll smoke a joint and I'll be chill for a little bit. I you're right, it's a completely different conversation, but let's move on to something that took a lot of our mind share and radio waves and print news right before the All-Star break. The Anthony Davis demanding of a trade, and we're not going to focus on Anthony Davis in specific, but we've seen this, right? Paul George did this.
Yeah.
Some other guys have done this. The NBA has empowered its players to the point where they can dictate terms. And while it's good for the players because they ultimately want to win a championship, this is so bad for fan bases. Think about the Pelicans, right? They thought that they had a team. And even last year when they were overachieving, they swept through the first round, and ultimately they came up against the unbeatable Warriors. But whatever. It felt like they were moving right in the right direction. Now, all of a sudden, it's, all right, here we go, back to the bottom of the heap. I mean, the NBA, can they do anything about this at this point?
I think they've tried a number of things, and it's all backfired. You can go back to LeBron's decision and how, you know, they created a more punitive luxury tax. And basically what they did was they wound up hurting Oklahoma City in the process. They hurt a small market team that was doing things the right way.
That's a good point.
Because they were like, well, we don't want to pay a luxury tax for James Harden, so we'll trade him.
Yeah.
And then they traded James Harden. And then 3 years later, Kevin Durant's like, yo, I wish we had James Harden. since we don't, I'm out. And now you're like, oh, wait, Kevin Durant just left to go to Golden State. Well, how do we keep our stars? Let's give them more money. Okay, so you add the Supermax, and then all of a sudden teams are like, yo, I don't want to pay DeMarcus Cousins the Supermax. I'm trading him as soon as I get the first chance. I don't pay Jimmy Butler. I'm trading him the first chance I get. So it's really everything you try to do in terms of trying to keep guys in one place, it's going to wind up hurting you in the end. What you have to do is just accept the fact that you can't bribe guys in the stands. You can't create a rule that's going to make guys stay somewhere. You know, everybody's motivated by different things. Some guys are motivated by rings. Some guys are motivated by money.
Yeah.
Some guys are motivated by shine and fame and celebrity. So that's just going to be the nature of the business. What you want to do is maybe provide incentive for organizations who put together competent front offices and coaching staffs that, you know, actually give players an environment where they feel empowered and that they want to stick around and stay.
Yeah,
I think that's what really needs to be done. Like, maybe do something that helps the front offices be better at their job, so the players don't want to always look over their shoulder about what's better.
Yeah,
I think that's really what's happening. A lot of times these guys leave is because the team is plateaued and they feel like the team is going in another direction that they just don't want to be a part of, and that's just the nature of the business. You know, it's kind of disappointing as fans because we get so used to having guys with one team or one organization, and you're going to have the situation now where guys leave, and like, to me, I think it's really weird that a guy like Ray Allen, who's a Hall of Famer, who's won a championship, he played great in Milwaukee, he played great in Seattle, played great in Miami, played great in Boston, he will never have his jersey retired anywhere.
Yeah, you're right.
He's going to leave the game not having his jersey retired anywhere.
Yeah.
So when you have all this player movement, you just don't have that connection with fans that, you know, that's long lasting.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a good point.
So that's one thing that we sort of are going to lose with this. And maybe some players will understand that just having that deeper connection, that deeper bond with the fan base, that goes a long way because you feel like you have a home in this game.
Yeah.
And that's why I think people were so disturbed when DeMar DeRozan got traded. And I think his comeback to Toronto tonight is going to be so incredible because the fans didn't ask him to go anywhere. He got traded. And I think he's going to probably experience more love than he ever did when he played there.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And how you laid that out and the process of how it came to where it is right now is so clear. I mean, it makes a ton of sense. Teams often get stuck doing things that they don't necessarily want to or need to do. Michael Lee, I appreciate you hopping on with us for a little bit and giving us some intel.
Absolutely.
Details. Have a good weekend and hopefully chat with you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.